Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Didn't you text me recently saying Gary Neville said Solskjaer needs to just pick 11 players and let them go out and decide what their style of play is going to be? What the fuck is that?
This is Paul McGrath. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
That morning sky gave me a look, so I left while you were sleeping. That's all it took.
Time to grow up. This is just not good enough. Villa didn't collapse after going 2-0 up or trying to hang on for the last 10 minutes. Villa, let's get real, Villa were terrible for 40 minutes, the last 40 minutes of that game. Actually, neither team did anything in the first half of note. And then Villa were just terrible after they got into the lead and tried to hold on at home to a 1-0 lead against Wolverhampton Wanderers. That is not progression that I want to see or want to associate with my club. And I'm angry enough at this fucking match anyway, and that mentally weak, the fragility that we see from Villa too often, the inconsistency, although it's probably just bloody consistent now, but then trying to start this fucking podcast, we're having internet problems, I've had to buy a new mic, and now I'm on the 4G trying to stream it from Derry, which is technically in the UK, and I have an Irish phone. This is the most expensive podcast of all time. And it's after Villa shat the bed against Wolves.
Yeah, it was really, really turgid stuff. I mean, the first half, there was an awful lot of passing the ball and watching it, standing back. And appreciating your pass is what you would normally call it, but there were so few passes worth appreciating that it's not really appropriate here. Our players being caught in their heels, messy passes, tentative decision-making, no rhythm, no connection. And all this was interspersed with some beautiful football. And then we sorted it out. We came out and played a bit of football, played with a bit of control on the ball and controlled the game by having a solid defensive setup. And then it all just went to shit. Then we had our inspirational captain deciding it was a good idea to start wasting time at home in the 60th minute of a game that we're only 1-0 up in, and during which we've shown we can create a lot of openings because Wolves aren't there at the back. A game that for the 15 previous minutes, immediately before this moment, we had control of. And our captain decides to send out the message that we're going to see this one out from here. It was the 60th minute.
Yeah.
Big Tyrone tells his teammates to stop playing and make sure that Wolves get the fucking message as well. I mean, never mind the fact that he didn't even use the time that he was wasting to have to think about what he was going to do. The next thing he did, he just clipped the ball to a Wolves centre half. It was fucking pathetic. And it was just non-stop Wolves possession from there on, apart from McGinn's shit goal. I mean, it was really, really pathetic stuff. 48 minutes of playing like headless chickens, and then 36 minutes of playing like a roast chicken that's just been served to Wolves to devour. And it had all the fucking trimmings. that a Tyrone Mings losing his head and losing the ball, slashing at volleys under no pressure, players running down blind alleys, making bad decisions or making no decisions over and over again. It had Matt Target unable to run. It had Dean Smith not reacting. It was real comfort food for Wolves. It was pathetic.
We gave Pep Guardiola stick for suggesting that Tyrone Mings was time-wasting in the 36th minute against Man City. Now, in hindsight, like, I know hindsight is 2020, but now we know that he probably was fucking time-wasting. Like, he is the last person as well that I would trust to say, leave it to me now, lads. I'll take it from here. It's like when you're inviting an onslaught, he could be exposed. And you mentioned Tyrone Mings. Like, let's just jump to the Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award right now, because there's only two nominations. One of them is the Twanzebe thing at the start of the game, but like that seems so insignificant now compared to what happened in the second half. The second nomination I have are Mings and Target. What the fuck? And it was because of that. You said slashing the ball up into there. The two of them were just planted on their right foot and just swinging a left leg over and over and hoping a ball would hit it. It was like one of those little automatic machines, like a pinball you're trying to hit at the right time, and they never hit it at the right time. They just hit it into the air, and that just continued. And Wolves, it was so inevitable. Like that 5 minutes in between Wolves' first goal and the second goal obviously isn't a long time. It felt like a long time, and it felt like I've never been more sure of a goal coming in all my life. And that's because Villa, they played badly, yes, but this is a mindset thing. Villa lost this game today purely because of cowardice and purely because they didn't have a backbone. If you want to invite people on and that's the way you want to see it out, then grand, but you have to bloody deliver when you're going to do that. And just one more thing on this. Villa in their project right now, this should be the most fun part of it. This is the chance. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, Villa can afford to play some football. They can afford to lose some points. If Villa were going for the Champions League, or this is coming in towards the end of the season, and they want to see stuff out, and they're starting to freak out, we'd all probably understand a bit more. But right now, we just want to see some progression, and I don't want to see them giving up after scoring one fucking goal against Wolves.
Yeah, we want to see some progression. What we also want to see is a bit of fucking football. You can't just stop playing in a football game after 60 minutes. It's fucking pathetic. It's unbelievable. For Twanzebe's cock-up, I mean, big Tyrone, who's well used to these type of situations developing because he's normally the instigator and because he's trained with Harry Maguire in the England camp, is the one who actually gets us out of it. So fair play to him for that. But you're right to just put him and Matt Target into the what the fuck. Like, they were absolutely brutal. Think about how much work that Matt Cash got through on the other side and compare that with the absolute non-entity that was Matt Target during that game. He defended quite well for the first 10 minutes and then he was just useless after that. Tyrone Mings went to absolute pot. Like, what a terrible decision that was to try and see that game out. Unbelievable.
And we'll come back to Matt Target and the Vyman meter. The Vyman meter, which every time I go to write anything about it now, it's becoming increasingly like, what's the point of this fucking meter? Like, everybody's going down. We'll go through the goals here to start off with. 1-0. John McGinn's arse finally comes good. He does well. He turns. Nice ball. Like, I like this ball because he has three options. He has Watkins at the back post. He has Buendia at the front post. But he pulls it back. And it's a nice floated ball in for Ings, the attack, and a nice header. And to talk about this goal, I want to introduce a new category that I'm going to call Rate McGinn's Arse.
Yeah, look, John McGinn's arse, it was an absolute mess today. It was all over the place, and there was one in the first half as well where he lost the ball at the edge of his own box, trying to use his arse. I mean, that was just the final sod of grass being tamped into place above the 6 feet of soil, pressing down on a firmly nailed coffin for me and John McGinn's arse. I mean, trying to arse someone out of the way at the edge of your own box, trying to create situations where he can stick his arse into another footballer, it's weird. Like, he needs to see someone about it. He needs help. He's an arse addict, and it's destroying his life, and it's fucking destroying the people who love him most as well. And it must be brilliant when it works. It creates loads of space, and it must just feel great the same way nutmegging someone is just better than taking the ball past someone. But you nutmeg someone whenever their legs are open. You don't run towards somebody and try to put the ball through their shut legs. And you don't try to roll someone with your arse if they haven't overcommitted, created the contact. And if there isn't enough pace on the ball into you, you can't just start arsing people for no reason. But do you know when a good time to use your arse is? When you're on the edge of the opposition's box, whenever the defender has run up your arse, you've got them trapped in your arse, and now you can turn around and fuck them out the other side. That's when you use it. And he did brilliantly there, and he created the goal fantastically. And up until the last 15 minutes, John McGinn was absolutely brilliant today. He had so much creativity in his play, other than the fact, and he ruined that. He ruined that by using his arse so much.
Yeah, like, there's there were good points and bad points to his arse today, which is generally the case. Well, a lot of the time it's usually bad. It got him into a position for the assist, but I think it got him into trouble three times that I remember anyway, in the middle or just outside our box, just trying to plant himself up against people, like you say. And it also got him out of trouble twice by doing that. But it's not worth sacrificing three chances to get yourself out of trouble, but which you probably could have got out of trouble anyway without using yours. We don't know. He just decided that this was the best way of doing it, where he's planted it into somebody, somebody else comes towards him, and then he bursts out. But McGinn, I saw him, and like, you're right, like, he was brilliant for 75 minutes, and I saw him just drive past somebody initially in the middle of the pitch, and I thought, yes, like, that's what happens when he's on his toes, not when he's backing up on his arse, when he's actually just thinking, go forward. And it was almost like Matt Cash was influencing him in that state, like, where Cash is just starting to drive at people as the first question, and if the door's shut, then he comes back. And that's what I want to see McGinn do. Like, that's where he's most dangerous. His arse can be good when he needs it, but he shouldn't be looking to put it into positions where it has to be used.
Well, exactly. It's bizarre that he just needs to use his arse 10 times a game. And the other bizarre thing about it is he doesn't actually need to do it. You've hit the nail on the head there. John McGinn's got really quick feet and a really, really good burst of acceleration that gets him out of trouble a lot of the time. And his arse just gets him into trouble. He just keeps getting dragged back into this seedy world of arsing up against people. Just fucking let it go. Go see someone. Go see your fucking manager, who should be telling you, I love it whenever you turn people with your arse. But it has to be on, John.
Two-nil. This was just a gift of a goal. Hee Chan freaks out for no reason, just gives the ball back to Watkins. And I was thinking, like, this is summing up the opposition that we're playing right now. Like, these lot are diabolical. And Watkins gets a chance, gets blocked down, comes out to McGinn. Initially, I was like, oh, have it. Like, it was that sort of a goal, as I say, initially. And then you saw the replay, and it's just deflected. And I thought for once, he finally caught one of those balls that he's been trying to catch over the last 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. And how many times have we given out about John McGinn just hitting the ball as hard as he can? And this goal is why we give out about it, because he just has a shit connection so often.
Yeah.
And he gets incredibly lucky. But look, he's following the play in well, and he gets lucky, and he gets a goal that he probably deserved at that point.
Right. 2-1. So, again, I think in isolation, right, if you take this goal, now this goal is annoying because of Villa allowing the pressure to build and build and failing to clear it. You know, like, that's ultimately how this goal started, as a bad clearance from Watkins. But it's a nice ball. It's a very nice ball from Neves. It's cut across very well, and Sy scores. And it's all one touch sort of thing. Like, the ball comes across quickly and it's in the net quickly. And it reminded me of one of the five-a-side tournaments we were playing in. And like, our success getting to the semi-final was built on defence and working hard and like, not giving the other team an easy in. Like, we just, we worked hard, we covered every ground. But when you played, was it the ex-professionals we played in the semi-final, and everything they did was just in a split second. So no matter how hard you worked, the ball was gone by the time you turned around. And this goal, I'm giving Villa far too much credit, but like I say, in isolation, nice ball from Neves, quick pull across, open net.
Yeah, like, it's a terrible attempt at clearance from Watkins, but sometimes you just concede from brilliant pieces of play. It's brilliant from Neves, it's brilliant from Potence, and it's a really good goal from Wolves.
fucking 2-2, right? Matt Target actually looks out to the left wing. If you look at the slow-mo of it, the ball is coming into his man, who's about to roll the ball across the line. It's coming into inside of Matt Target on his right shoulder. And as this ball is coming, Target just decides to start looking out to the left wing. I don't know what he's looking at. I don't know if it would have affected anything. But to me, it just summed up a man who has not been clued in for far too fucking long this season.
Yeah, and sometimes you just concede from shit pieces of play as well. I mean, it's it's shit from Watkins, it's shit from Target, it's shit from Twanzebe, who can't get his feet sorted. I mean, just lift your knee there. What's he trying? He's trying to overhead kick or something, and he just can't get his body right. You're a professional footballer. You should have complete control of your body. Lift your knee and just knee that out of the way. It doesn't have to be with your foot. Sometimes just get rid of the fucking ball. But you're right. Whoever doesn't close down Traore as well is massively at fault. I mean, we've seen tonight, once again, that Traore's actually fucking terrible at football. You don't have to be afraid of him. So just close him down when he's in a congested box. If he tries to take it past you, I guarantee you he's running out of play with that football. Don't fucking worry about it. Stop him crossing the ball, though. And Watkins getting into a wrestling match, the back post. Target looking out to the wing when the ball's coming over his shoulder. It's fucking madness. And if he's going to do that, you think he would have some fucking awareness of where the player is.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seem to, because it gets to him anyway. And Target doesn't do anything. Shit goal.
Shit goal. And the third is probably the most infuriating of them all. It reminded me of Emil Heskey barging into... I think he barged into Zidane as well. England were beating France. Oh, might have been a qualifier match. 1-0. And it was late on in the game. Zidane scored two late goals, and one of them was a free kick because Heskey just barged into the back of him when everybody was back. And there goes Jacob Ramsey. It's Adama Traore again. They're like Twanzebe and Mings, I think, are just standing looking at him. Traore has nowhere to go. He's got no more space to run into, like, which is what he needs. And Ramsey just comes and fouls him for no fucking reason. It's so immature. It's so stupid. And it's so frustrating as well because, you just hear the reports of this game now in the media, and it's a Ruben Neves free kick. I started this podcast with the words grow up. Like, it's time for these pals, but the pals of mine in the fucking media, they grow up. Like, just tell the story as it was. It's a shit free kick. Matt Target has turned his back on it and it's hit him and gone in.
Yeah, it's absolutely pathetic from Matt Target, who angles his body just perfectly, just enough to make sure it goes right into the opposite corner. And look, if you're afraid of a football, then stop playing football. Stop walking out onto the pitch, because for most of the next 2 hours, there is going to be a football in fairly close proximity to you. Like, claustrophobic people don't get into lifts. People with arachnophobia don't keep tarantulas as pets. And Matt Target should stop playing football if that's how he feels about balls.
Yeah. Look, it's a terrible, terrible day at the office, and we're going to talk about some of the decisions, some of the subs, and plenty more stuff that happened in this game after this.
They've both got incredible arses.
The face on some of those lads, like McNeil, Wood. Like, Wood looks like a big a big GA midfielder, doesn't he?
Again, we'll use his arse in every scenario. He actually played a blind arse early on in the first half.
Does anyone sweat more than Ross Barkley? It actually looked like he was going for showers regularly during the game. What the fuck is wrong with you?
John Walters' arse has never let me down, though. John McGinn's has let me down several occasions this season.
He was drenched, like absolutely soaking. We don't care about
no government warning. El Ghazi is too prone to bad runs of form. He had a bit of crack in December and he was due a bad run. He's too patchy, he's too streaky. And that performance was the equivalent of a streak of shit in the toilets of a fucking bus station.
into somebody else's bosom. Bosom of possession, I mean. You know, like a bosom of possession, I mean. All right, what's up, whinges? Now that I've got my microphone fucking turned on. What a disaster. First one, I am fed up with Villa's fear of a yellow card. This starts from Adama Traore's run. Nice run. But he runs past McGinn, who tries to trip him. Well, half-heartedly tries to trip him. Runs past Dougie, who half-heartedly tries to trip him. Runs past Ponzebi, who fails to trip him. And every time, they fail because they're afraid they can see the yellow card. So it's like they want to foul him, but don't want to be too blatant about it. Meanwhile, it's just run 60 metres because we're so indecisive.
Yeah, it's absolutely pathetic. I don't really care about the not getting the yellow card. I care about the technical ability to defend. Why are they going for Adama Traore? Go for the fucking ball. The ball is there. He's knocking it 2 or 3 yards in front of him. I know he's a good dribbler, but he also panics. Go for the fucking ball. And if you don't get the ball, make sure that you get in hard enough that you do foul him. But go for the ball first and foremost. There was 4 players who attempted to go for Adama Traore, and then Tyrone Mings just ran away from him for some reason and let him have the shot. And luckily, Adama Traore is absolutely dreadful and had a shot straight at Emi Martinez's feet. But Jesus Christ, lads, learn how to tackle. It was like playing 5-a-side with you. It's like, come on, you can get the ball. You don't have to go for the man. Like, why do people not know how to defend? Look at the ball. That's all you're looking at. Have a quick glance at his body shape to see what might move. But go for the fucking ball. That's what you're on the pitch for.
There were so many elements of that mindset as well. It happened on the left for Wolves at one stage, and it happened on the other wing as well, so it happened on both wings, I just say that. Traore lost the ball and then won it back, but he won it back because the player who's trying to win it off him is so consumed with the fact that this is Adama Traore, and even though I have got myself in the position to go and win this ball now, I'm ahead of him. I can't be ahead of him, can I? This is Adama Traore. He's going to win a free kick off me. I'll just pull back and let him have the ball. It's like just like playing second fiddle to Adama Traore all day, or deferring to him and bowing to him, was so sad. Of all the pathetic things that happened in that game, this is probably the first.
Yeah, but like you could see from the first 30 minutes whenever Traore was trying to, why the fuck was Traore over in Khan's side? What an idiot.
That's so, like, that is, like, you're so right. I should have had that in You Like Them, We Didn't Take a 90-minute penalty award, included a Wolves nomination. Like, target Mings or the other side, go fucking get at them.
Yeah, this is Tyrone Mings, who was made look a fucking fool by Joelinton. Like, that's the man to target. Like, Adama Traore is Joelinton on fucking speed. Get over there. Get over on top of that Tyrone Mings lad. He is going to fucking freak out. Standing over next to Konza, who's just there having a fucking cigar, taking the ball off him non-stop. Started the game, fucking Adama Traore came out covered in Vaseline. What the fuck was that about? And all that did was make it fucking easier for Konza to put him in his pocket.
Slip right in there. Second nomination. Is Watkins becoming a greedy fucker?
I think Watkins has let this playing two up top get into his head, but there's a couple of things on that. I mean, playing these two centre forwards, two incredible centre forwards, and not doing enough to get them into the game. I mean, the entire game plan should be centred on sickening them with the ball in dangerous position, and that's if you're going to continue to play them as a front two. And there's not a whole lot of reason that we've seen so far that we should, to say that we should. I mean, they have no connection with each other. They're getting in each other's way. They're not giving each other options. It's not working.
Yeah.
And I can't yet see what work they're doing together on the training pitch. I don't know what the game plan is to get them on the ball. Are they telling each other where they should be going whenever I've got it? Well, I know where Ings should be going. He should just be walking off the pitch whenever Watkins has it, based on today. Because Christ almighty, he wasn't giving Danny Ings the football today. It was pathetic stuff. And that would be okay, and I don't mind that. I don't mind centre forwards being greedy. But have your fucking shot, if that's what you're going to do. Don't be just not making decisions once you've already made no decision to pass the ball to him.
Yeah, the one Watkins comes across, doesn't pass, comes on to his left, and you're like, okay, like this is going to be ambitious, but spank it. And then he doesn't want to hit it on his left, so he pulls back inside, loses the ball, wins it back, runs out of play. And like that sort of summed him up today, I thought, and just that attitude that he was bringing, like, you know, I need to score. And you're so right, that they're not linking up, they're not a partnership. The two of them are there, and they don't need to be there because they're not helping each other. So like it's you're not getting anything from having two players up top. You're actually just taking away from having another midfielder or another creative player. Like what they're doing right now, one person is just taking turns and the other person might as well just be standing aside watching this. Like it's such a waste of a player. It's not working. I love having Ings and Watkins in the team theoretically, but we need to start seeing more evidence that it's going to work, that we're going to try and make it work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we shouldn't be starting a game with Ings and Watkins and end up with Matt Cash, Buendia and John McGinn as our biggest attacking threats. That doesn't make any fucking sense.
And that's happening all the time.
Yeah, and we've got two England internationals up top. Let's figure out how to use them if we're going to continue to try to shoehorn them both in. We've changed our entire system to get the two of them into the team. So make sure that the system is now working with the two of them in the team.
You know we're going to have a 4-4-2 conversation at some stage, Liam.
You'll not be having that with me, Connor.
Speaking of greedy fuckers, the third nomination. This one comes courtesy of Daniel H. on Twitter. I'm all for people tweeting us their own WhatsApp whinges. It reads, Cash hasn't stopped fucking shooting since scoring one.
He's so fucking right. I mean, you got me excited when you read out his quote saying that he feels like he needs to get more goals and assists. I didn't think that was going to be, meaning he was going to shoot under every single circumstance, no matter if it was on his left foot, no matter if he had any balance, no matter if there were other options, no matter if there was 15 people in front of him. He is just shooting now. If he gets within 25 yards of the net, it's absolutely pathetic and so counterproductive. And maybe now that I've said that, maybe that's why Watkins and Ings are playing so poorly together, because Matt Cash is just spanking the ball relentlessly.
The only other nomination I have is, and we've talked about him enough, this Traore boy is a cunt. I can't even remember why I wrote this down. Like, he looked dangerous at some stage, and then I realised like he's looking dangerous with no end product again, and he's hogging a lot of the ball, and it was just generally annoying me then at that stage.
Well, what was annoying me was the fact that the commentators clearly didn't understand the sport of football. Like, they were fawning over him. There was one where he ran back and Konza flicked the ball off Traore, and it came back off Traore, and he's facing his own goals, and he's got the ball back the other side of Konza. It's like, and they're saying, oh, it's incredible how easily he keeps the ball. He didn't keep the ball there. He lost it, and the ball fell back at his feet.
Yeah, and that's it for WhatsApp whinges. We're going to move on to the award section. See you there.
I burst onto the scene, didn't I? And I was going to be the next best thing.
Oh, who was it that said? There was an interview somebody recently and they said that he's always positive. It was Micah Richards.
Hold on, I played for England at 18, youngest ever defender to play for England.
It was Micah Richards, he was talking on Sky Sports and he said he's always positive. Sometimes you wish he wasn't as positive. Like he said he was too nice.
Right.
What do you think of that?
I think Micah Richards should shut the fuck up. What the fuck has Micah Richards ever done for Aston Villa? Dean Smith got Aston Villa promoted from 14th in the championship. Micah Richards was just there collecting 40 grand a week while that was all happening.
Oh, he's just brilliant. He's just top. What a guy to work with you are, honestly.
I don't even have any will to do the Ronnie Rosenthal award because it suggests that Villa missed some chances, but they did miss some chances, so let's just get through it. Grin and bear it with me. I'm trying to remember what the hell these were. No, it's just like when you've been hit
by 10 minutes like that, how, like, nothing else really matters. How can you remember it? I've got written down here, Matt Cash to Emi Buendia. I think it was Matt Cash had a nice flick off and Buendia's just missed.
It's the one, that's the one that goes behind Buendia and he still tries to score. And it's really hard to resist, but you're never going to score from that angle with the ball behind you on the volley. And he obviously just hits the side net and he can't get his foot around it enough to get it back on target. And he should really let it go because I'm sure that Watkins is behind him. But when the ball's there for a volley, even if it is behind you, everybody hits it.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Thanks for pulling me out of that one. I really should be more on top of it. But look, I'm rattled. Thank you. Forgive me for this. Danny Ings missed like this. This was so annoying, right? Not because of the miss, but because of who it was. Yet again, every time Danny Ings misses a chance like this, this is one that McGinn had a nice pass through to Buendia, played a nice pass through to Ings, and it's just sat up for him. Not sat up, it's just rolled right through to his right foot, 17 yards out, and he lifts it up for the keeper to get a better angle for him to save it. He hits it across the keeper where he already is, covering most of the goals. It's a tame shot from supposedly a razor-sharp finisher. It was disappointing.
Yeah, and I actually think that chance summed up Buendia's performance. I mean, you're buzzing around, miscontrolling the ball, involved nearly too much, and getting turned and doing something terrible like overrunning the ball, and then doing something perfect like sliding the centre forward through with unbelievable precision. And it's shite from Danny Ings. You need to have a bit of composure there. The keeper's giving him the near post. Put it in there.
Matty Cash, let's go. Ollie Watkins, a lovely flick off for him. Cash blazes over. Then Cash cuts inside on his left. Buendia is completely free. All he has to do is roll him. Buendia is 15 yards out. The whole defence has sank back inside because they're following our two strikers. Cash gets it on his left. Blazes over even higher than his first chance. That was probably the most annoying, just considering the right pass, especially when it's on the right back's left foot. But the right pass is somebody standing in the middle of the box 15 yards out and it's on his right foot.
Yeah, and the defence probably sinks back because they know they're waiting for this shot to come from Matt Cash. They're well used to it. And the first one, it's incredible from Buendia again, the ball over the top. And Watkins' touch is absolutely brilliant. And it's a great bit of movement from Cash to get the chance. And look, maybe he does have to spank that one because it's a tight enough angle and he's far enough out. But if you're going to spank it on fucking targets. That blazing the ball over the bar. Dougie did it. Cash did it two or three times. So frustrating.
Ollie Watkins missed the bloody ball from the corner as it came across. We didn't see a replay of it because Villa had another corner straight after, in which Danny Ings, yet again, has a free header. And he just looks like he's never headed the ball before in his life. It hits off the crown of his head. He sort of braces himself for the contact. His neck seems to sink into itself. And the ball just goes right over the bar with no chance of threatening the keeper.
Yeah, in the fucking 90th minute as well, it falls to your centre forward. Your supposedly deadly centre forward. And he's completely free. It's exactly what we wanted from that routine. All of the Wolves players have got sucked under their own crossbar. They followed in the big centre halves and the centre forward. And Danny Ings is there, free in the box, free header. Waste of time.
Did you notice Danny Ings laughing at John McGinn's shots? John McGinn had a half volley that zip wide, and the slow-mo of it, it just goes flying past Ings, goes flying past the post, and you can see Ings turning around, just laughing at McGinn. I don't know, it's like, are you serious, or what are you doing? Like, it was just such disrespect for him.
It was an incredible shot from John McGinn, but I would be laughing at him as well. I'd probably be screaming at him, what the fuck are you doing? I mean, that's such a low percentage chance that he nearly gets it in, but he's also so unlikely to do it that he probably shouldn't attempt it in the first place. The only good thing about that is that it nearly knocked out Michael Oliver, which would have brought McGinn way up in the Vyman meter.
I think the winner has to be... it's probably either of Danny Ings's, really. So Danny Ings has to win this, right?
Ah, absolutely. Yeah, you can give it to him for both of them. Give him two awards, sure.
The Tim Sherwood, we play two number 10s and bamboozled them award, hasn't aged well. Bringing Emi Buendia back into the team.
Yeah, Buendia was a bit all over the place, I thought. I mean, he did do some brilliant things, and I mentioned two of them there just a second ago, but I think he was reaching for the game a bit too much, and he was just far too erratic. He was coming far too deep, trying to get involved. There was no... It really fucked over the team, I think. We didn't have the same structure then whenever we're playing Buendia. I don't know if a free role works whenever you're playing a 3-5-2, especially if Matty Cash is bombing so far forward. You probably need a bit more solidity in the midfield. You need someone like Jacob Ramsey, who wasn't particularly good when he came on, but someone who can play centre midfield but can also do things on the ball. Someone like John McGinn. I don't know if Buendia works there.
Okay, so you've just transferred him into the You Let Glenn Whelan Take a 90 of Minute Penalty Award. So let's bring him in here and we'll go through the other nominations. you mentioned a corner routine there, but like, you know, where's Austin McPhee's work for set piece against us?
Oh, pathetic. Unbelievable. You're so right. Surely he's not just working on attacking set pieces, because if he is, he fucking needs to start working on them a bit more, because Villa were a disaster from attacking set pieces today. They did absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
The only chance I can remember is from a fake long throw-in, which got switched to McGinn. But this is what makes me think that it wasn't routine, because if part of the routine has Matt Target going up and winning a header as a constituent part of it, then it's a poorly thought out routine. So I think that was just off the cuff from McGinn floating it over to Target, and Target happens to win it, but that can't have been a set play move. But other than that, Cons ends up getting a header. But other than that, I don't think we've created anything. And then defensively, we were a fucking shambles.
Right, what did you make of the subs? Again, in hindsight now, they're being pillared online. Obviously, like, we conceded 3 goals after they were all made. But like, if you really go through it, Nakamba was always going to come on for Douglas Luiz. Douglas Luiz played 20 minutes for Brazil yesterday in South America. Like, he was always coming off after 60, 70 minutes, and he got 67 minutes of a good performance. Maybe he should just play a game before every day or every time. Ramsey coming on for Buendia, I thought that was obvious enough as well. Now, again, I know it's frustrating that Ramsey bundled into the back of Traore, for fuck's sake. But like, you know, we didn't have any evidence that he'd be going to do that up until now. Like, Ramsey's been playing well for us this season, and I thought that sub was always going to happen as well. The only one I take really big issue with, I don't know if it led to any of the goals, but it probably showed that we were dicking around a bit at this stage. Like, he brought Ashley Young on in the 79th minute, so just a minute before the first goal, but he brought him on for Matt Cash. So this is really like, you know, all right, we're 2-0 up, with 10 minutes left, we've got a chance to put Young on. Put him on for Matt Target, who's A, not having a good game, and B, should be under pressure now anyway. And like, C, Matt Cash is one of our better defenders. We need him to see this game out, if that is apparently what we're going to try and do for the last, well, as it turned out, last 40 minutes.
Yeah, and look, there was 3 obvious subs to make. Nakamba had to come on for Douglas Luiz. Jacob Ramsey had to come on for Buendia. And Ashley Young had to come on for Matt Target. So it was, the subs were so obvious and they all needed to happen. Maybe he could have brought off Ings. Maybe to try and freshen things up, because he had run out of gas as well. Maybe he could have switched formation again. Maybe he could have dropped an extra body into midfield. It's hard to tell. I have absolutely no idea why he brought off Matt Cash for Ashley Young. That was just absolutely bizarre. But the other 2 subs absolutely had to happen. The 2 lads weren't running anymore. They couldn't move. They couldn't get on the ball. Whenever they did get on the ball, they lost it. And look, it didn't work out well, because Jacob Ramsey conceded the foul, was bad on the ball, and Nakamba was marvellous Nakamba. he did exactly what you'd expect him to do. Be shit on the ball and not give you the defensive solidity that he's supposed to. And I don't know what he could have done, though. Those subs had to happen, and those are the players that Aston Villa have on their bench.
Yeah, it's probably linked to what you're touching on there as well. I think another nomination I had was that I feel like he needed to intervene as well, because Villa were shit for half an hour before they conceded, and they would have had 15 more minutes of conceding as well. But like, before they conceded, I feel like something should have changed. We mentioned Ings and Watkins not playing with each other. I feel like the formation had to change at the very least, and like, yeah, probably could have freshened things up a bit more. But those 2 subs were going to be made, so like, yeah, we are hamstrung in that sense. Well, do you know what? Actually, no. Like, the Buendia sub isn't an automatic sub that's going to happen. It's only an automatic sub because of, well, how he performed and how it panned out in the end. But I feel like it could have changed things around and tried to get a different impetus into the game, or a different shape of formation, or a different point of our attack.
Yeah, like, it could have brought on Jaden for Ings, say, and switched to a 4-3-3. And push Buendia up front that's what he could have done something like that. You know, he could have and brought on Jacob Ramsey for one of the defenders. He could have done something of that ilk. But I really think that Jaden would have been a really good sub to bring on, because Villa were so lacking in imagination in the attacking phase. And if they were only going to get on the ball so sporadically, then why not have it as a loose cannon like Jaden coming onto the pitch and just running them ragged? And that would have suited Wolves' defensive. It would have suited going up against Wolves' defensive setup as well. Someone like that who's going to run in between the defenders, who's going to cause an imbalance instead of just playing the ball back and forth in front of the Wolves' defence. We did need something different to change. And Ings scored a goal, and it was a really good header. He also missed two sitters. I think he was poor today, and he could have easily have come off.
That's frustrating. It just feels like sometimes, yeah, we're not acting, we're reacting. And sometimes when you're reacting, you're too late to do anything. And the pattern of the game has established itself. And yeah, like you've fallen into a mindset that it's often hard to get out of. And this was a perfect example of it
today. Yeah, and if the players on the pitch decided that's what they were going to do, if they decided they were going to close up shop, then Dean should have just said, no, you're fucking not.
Yeah.
Here's Jaden Philogene-Badassi now. He's on the fucking pitch. You're not closing up shop with him on there. Get him the fucking ball. Get it to him out wide and get the ball into Watkins' head. That's what we're doing now. We're not letting this happen. I'm not letting Tyrone Mings dictate where this game is going.
Yeah.
And that's something that...
because Tyrone, you're coming off and the Hungarian Conference are going to just hold the fort for us.
And that's something that Dean Smith ordinarily does. I mean, we won 1-0 up against Everton and he brought on Leon Bailey. You know, Dean Smith can sense when a game is drifting and whenever the players are taking the fucking piss, and he probably should have reacted to that today. Sorry, he should have reacted to that today.
Yeah. The Vyman meter. I want to start with my target because this probably comes into a bit of a... You let Glenn Whelan take a 90th minute penalty award as well. Why is Matt Target the player who seems like his position is least at risk in the team outside of Emi Martinez? Like, how the fuck has that happened? Like, he should be the one who's under most pressure. And if you look through, like, it seems like every other position players are under pressure. Like, John McGinn probably isn't, because he's playing well and he's playing better than the players he's rivals with. Mings, House, Twanzebe, Konsa. Like, they're under pressure because there's a good player coming in there. Fucking Matt Cash is coming off for Ashley Young tonight. There's Ings and Watkins up top. There's Cameron Archer that is playing. There's, like you're mentioning, Jaden. Chuck Wemiga still to come in. Why is Matt Target the one who seems to be nailed on and has to play? And has to play 90 minutes when he's playing really badly?
Yeah, it's madness. It was 48 of the last 49 games he's played. And the only game he missed was because he had a fucking nightmare in the first game of the season and had to be dropped for the next game. I think it is bizarre because he's playing so poorly this year. And part of the reason why he's playing so poorly this year is because Matt Target can't play as a wingback. Yeah. He just doesn't have the athleticism. So he can't defend because he's fucking gassed. And he can't attack because he's got no pace.
That's like... perfectly summed up. You could also just said he can't attack because he's fucking gassed. Like, he's wasting all his gas just running 30 meter shuttle runs in the, like, he's not effective on the sideline going up and down past the halfway line. What Matt Target's giving you is not worth what he's not giving you. Like, you know, you can always look at that with every player. It's like, well, you know, you're losing someone here, but like, look what he's given us. He's not giving us anything at the minute. He was brilliant last season. After a certain point, he really turned us around. He deserved the Player of the Year award that he got at the end of the year. But right now, he's a disaster waiting to happen. And he's not providing. His left foot isn't providing. He's not cutting inside. There was one stage he did cut inside. I don't know what had happened. The ball broke and he ended up finding himself in the box and just had to lay it out for, I'm going to say, John McGinn. And he just... shortchanged them by about 20 meters and the balls got cut out and it was another counterattack that he was never going to get back for in time. Like, he's just not giving us enough to make up for what he's not giving us at the back.
Yeah, and like Matt Target's form changed last year whenever Villa really, really tightened up and Matt Target was playing right next to Tyrone Mings. Villa were essentially in a defensive setup playing six defenders. Andel Ghazi was just at left back whenever Villa didn't have the ball, and Target was tucked right in and he was really solid in there and he was ending moves, and from an attacking point of view it was good because Villa had a platform in possession Villa were moving up the pitch in phases, so Matt Target could walk up the pitch. He didn't have to run. He didn't have to go in crazy overlaps. Jack Grealish was creating mayhem and creating space for Matt Target. And whenever those things are taken away, whenever he's asked to defend coming back, facing his own goals, and whenever he's asked to be the outlet on the left wing, he can't do it.
Like, we could mention so many players that are going down in the Vimeo meter, but I just wanted to talk about the ones who are probably going furthest down. And that's Matt Target, obviously. I'm going to include Jacob Ramsey just for that contribution to the game today. Like, that was terrible, and we lost the game because of it. So needless. And I'm going to include Ollie Watkins as well, yet again. And because I'm including him for a third week in a row, which I don't like doing, but right now, he is frustrating. And once more, and I know I'm repeating myself, it's just so different to the Ollie Watkins that we loved last year.
Yeah, I think it's hard to disagree with any of those. It was so fucking stupid from Jacob Ramsey to bother sticking in a toe there. You've seen this, you've watched the game, you've seen Douglas Luiz play so many times, you know that tackle doesn't work. All you end up doing is getting booked and giving away a free kick, so don't nip in. No matter how much you can't resist it, you have to resist it, because all anybody ever does in that situation is give away a foul. Ollie Watkins, we've talked about him enough, he was fucking, he was a mess, he just couldn't get his head straight, and he's snatching at games at the minute, he's desperate to try and make an impression. I thought he would react well to having the pressure of another centre-forward in the squad instead of just whatever Wesley's supposed to be. I thought he would be able to step up to that and become a better player because of the pressure. Maybe we got it wrong, or maybe it's just that he doesn't suit playing in a two.
Yeah, or once more, maybe we need to reimagine how we're going to play with that two and play in a way that gets some chances, sickens him with ball, and makes them work together. Going up, one suggestion, John McGinn.
John McGinn was absolutely brilliant, apart from his arse today. I mean, the creativity and the imagination with the things that he did, and it all worked as well. Like, John McGinn often sees really, really good passes, really clever passes, but for the last couple of weeks, they haven't been working. He's been overhitting them, he's been hitting them out of play, but everything was on the money today. He was brilliant off the ball as well. He was brilliant at running with the ball. It was only his arse that let him down today, like it so often does.
Questions we can't answer, but probably will. Good to just have a look around and see the misfortunes of other teams as well. I want to talk about who Newcastle are going to sign first, but then I thought, which players are every club going to try and offload on Newcastle now? Because like that's going to be the mindset. It's like, oh, yes, happy days. Like, we can get a few quid out of these dopes now who are desperately going to try and climb their way up the table.
Yeah, I mean, like, in reality, what they need to do is probably sign a John Hume, a unifying figure, a real statesman or something, or, I don't know, Barack Obama's speechwriter or something like that, somebody to try and turn around this absolute PR disaster. They could also just ask their owners to stop murdering people. But what has me actually excited, though, is the fact that Frank Lampard is being linked with the job. That shows you how much of an absolute fucking shit show this could potentially be. And you're right to think about the players that could end up getting offloaded to them. Like, where is their Rabinho? Because it's coming. It's definitely coming. If they're looking at Frank Lampard, if they're genuinely considering him, if he's in the conversation,
yeah,
Jesus Christ, this could be an absolute dream. And I was actually worried there that, oh, brilliant, now there's just five big clubs that there will be in 3 or 4 years' time. The spending power that Newcastle are going to have. But if this is their decision-making process, they're bringing in Frank Lampard. Christ almighty, this is going to be some show.
The beauty of the Frank Lampard links is that he's already had a chance with more money than anybody. He was spending a fortune, a quarter of a billion, I think, during a pandemic when nobody else was spending. And he couldn't make it work with a team then that ended up proving that they're Champions League winners and one of the best teams in England, or best team in Europe, I suppose. But I heard somebody mention Rafa Benitez, who's, would love to go back there with a chance of a budget and stuff like that. So when Lampard got mentioned, I thought, that's brilliant. Like, somebody who already can spend money is going to go. And Newcastle are starting. So remember where Man City were, like the frustrating thing about Man City back then, at the end of the decade before last now, actually. They were below Villa. But they weren't, like, they were around mid-table, and then they sort of started buying Villa players and the like, and then moved their way up that way. Came the top six, started buying Arsenal players, moved their way up that way. But with Newcastle, they're starting even further down. So I was thinking, right, this, you could get a lot of money for El Ghazi here, couldn't you? You know, imagine Bournemouth, what Bournemouth are to Liverpool. Like, Newcastle could now be to everybody else. And, like, Divock Origi's definitely going there for 30 million. You know, but like, this is a big opportunity for us and everybody. Like, Newcastle need the money, they need to move up the table, but they're not even going to be able to attract a Rabinho, who would go and fuck up the club anyway. But they're going to have to just go down a little bit further. They're going to have to go to El Ghazi. You're going to have to go to a proven goal scorer.
Someone who they know can deliver from 12 yards out. And look, there's a real danger that Newcastle, if they end up appointing Frank Lampard and if they can't get the players in January, Newcastle could easily get relegated. Yeah. And this is the brilliant thing about being a manager in this situation, whoever gets the job, is like they literally have a clean slate. There's no player in that team. There's every position can just be bought. They just need to sign a player everywhere on the pitch. It's insane. Like, there's nobody who'd be overly concerned about, you know, putting their nose at a joint. Alan Saint-Maximin, maybe, but he's got a bit of Latrores about him as well. He's playing a lot better this season, but they can literally just sign 10 players, and it must be a dream. Like, who do you want to be in your team now?
I'm El Ghazi. All right. Second question we can't answer, and last. Why are all the reports saying United's defence was a shambles when Harry Maguire's back?
Oh God, I cannot believe that Harry Maguire has played 6 games this season and he's made the same mistake 5 times. I mean, luckily for him, it took until the 5th one for it to end up on a goal. But it's absolutely unbelievable how whenever you play a ball to a fridge, you end up conceding the chance. He just cannot get the ball out of his feet. He's fucking you. It's hilarious. It's absolutely amazing to see. Like, I was watching that game and the goal rush came on afterwards and I could not believe it. And you know the goal is coming and I could see De Gea, the ball at De Gea's feet. And I said to myself, I bet you this ball is going to Harry Maguire and that's how they're conceding. That is absolutely what's going to happen here. And that is absolutely what happened. And of course it is.
This is the amazing thing about this game as well, and that goal specifically. Solskjaer was being asked and people were talking afterwards about Harry Maguire making that mistake because he's just back from injury. Harry Maguire makes this mistake all the time and he only missed, did he miss 2 games? Tops, or 1.5 games he came off against Villa. So he missed 1 game and then had a 2-week break like everybody else did. And he's back for this game and he's just carried on doing exactly what he's been doing.
Yeah, it's insane. And sure, again as well, the Villa second half was kicked off delayed, so there was 3 minutes where you could see the United game, and there was, in that 3 minutes, Harry Maguire had the ball once, it came to him, he kneed it into the air and then volleyed it out of play under no pressure, just kicked it across the pitch back to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It was fucking hilarious. He, like, that man, whenever he does get the ball out of his feet, he's got such a propensity for picking out the advertising hoardings. It's unbelievable. And I know we cost 80 million, so it must be difficult for people to make the link that he's actually shit, but just make that link. Rabinho cost 35 million whenever he was signed, but we all found out and admitted pretty soon that he was shit, that he wasn't up to it, that he was just a signing that had a name. And that is what Harry Maguire is. Let's just start saying it.
Wesley was Aston Villa's club record signing.
Exactly.
There was nobody saying, well, he's good, he has to be good, we didn't spend all that money on him for no reason. Yes, yes, we did. Such a luxury having a great ball-playing centre-back like Harry Maguire there. It's going to be fun watching United's run now over the next few weeks. It's a tough run. Teams like Arsenal are in there. I heard somebody say, Claudio Ranieri is just joined Watford. They're in this middle of this run as well. Liverpool just beat them 5-0 today, but because they have a new manager, it's like, well, that's a tough one for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They have to deal with down the tracks. It's going to be fun, and it's going to be one thing that we have to comfort ourselves throughout this mess that is Aston Villa.
Yeah, and I always have a little bit of a worry about whether or not we should be going on about this so much, because we don't want people cottoning on to the idea that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is an absolute clueless moron and that Harry Maguire is a refrigerator, because they might actually eventually act and get rid of those two people. So maybe we should just keep it quiet.
It's funny, though. It's an amazing thing. Like, Neville, in fairness, you know, I've been keeping a close eye on this man. He's starting to, you know, just calm down a little bit on his Ollie praise, which was getting close to his Gareth Southgate praise for a while there. But he's been saying that because United tried the top manager route and it didn't work. It didn't work with Mourinho. It didn't work with Van Gaal. They've tried the world-class managers. They are going to see this out. Out until what? At what cost? You know, when does this get seen out? When does Solskjaer hand the reins over and say, taking it as far as I can? They're going to, like, Solskjaer is just benefiting now, it seems, because Van Gaal got sacked and Mourinho was a disaster. Like, everybody said he was going to be a disaster. And now this man can do it for as long as he likes. So I don't think that's actually a real live worry at what you're saying, that they might cop onto it. I think everybody at United is just thinking, I don't even think that they're thinking this needs to work. I just think they're thinking, let's give it another year or two and then it looks better when we do sack him.
Yeah, I mean, you asked a really good question there. I mean, at what cost? I'll tell you what cost. 400 million for no output. That's the cost of this so far. And whatever his fucking preposterously high wages are, which is just any sort of money that you're giving him, because the man is not up to the job. But didn't you text me recently saying Gary Neville said Solskjaer needs to just pick 11 players and let them go out and decide what their style of play is going to be? What the fuck is that?
He's brilliant, in fairness to him. Yeah, because again, there's so much contradictions in what Gary Neville says. For example, yeah, he talks about United squad not being up to Chelsea and Man City standards, but then he does a top four prediction and he has United ahead of Liverpool, for example. But then he will talk about Liverpool having a way better first 11. Yeah, you know, and then why that's more important, but now the squad's not important. And now, God love him, in fairness, God love him. And now he's saying that United need to do what Liverpool and City, he said what City used to do, never mind what they do now, is that they put out a consistent team. He said Solskjaer needs to know what his league team is and put it out there and let them figure out an identity and a style.
That's not what Liverpool and Man City did. They picked their 11 best players and had a manager, yeah, and had managers who are incredible, who gave them that identity, who gave them that style. Liverpool don't play the same as they played under the other managers. They play absolutely electric football. Man City play an incredibly effective, slightly boring style of football. But they're not going out styleless. It's not because those systems weren't decided because there was 11 players on the pitch.
I think it's just really lucky that Jurgen Klopp had Jordan Henderson, and who was able to figure out a style on the pitch for Liverpool. And, you know, it just worked, and Klopp is just benefiting from playing these players, and it's just happened for him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's so lucky that he managed to sign two absolutely terrifying wingers and a centre forward who could drop into the number 10 position, and then three midfielders who could run 10k in 40 minutes and one brilliant ball playing midfielder in that mix. That just happened. It just magically appeared for him that this was how Liverpool were going to play. So lucky.
Yeah, so if United persist with Solskjaer, then hopefully they can get the same luck. And who are we to say that it won't happen? It won't. All right, we'll see later. This has been, I don't even remember half of this podcast now. It's been a shell-shocking day. Very disappointing. It's bad. Two bad results now. In a row, that is. We've lost four already in this league campaign. It's going badly. I've got my mic working, though. That's one thing. And, I don't know.
You're an absolute bollocks. You cheered me up there by talking about how shit United were, and then I had briefly, momentarily forgotten about the absolute shit show of 2 hours ago.
Just remember that Tielemans goal. Remember Harry Maguire. And we'll leave you with that. See you later. That wind is calling my name, and I